Good afternoon, everybody. We'll call to order the Energy Utilities, Technology, and Communications Committee meeting. And on Tuesday of this week, we heard testimony on removing the moratorium on nuclear energy. And at this time, we have Senator Koch will bring the bill back up, Senate File 355, and open it up to discussion by committee members. There are a number of people in the audience who are still here to answer questions if need be. Senator Koch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could have a few minutes just to sort of talk about some of the testimony that was given on Tuesday and give a little bit of my perspective. I think I was fairly non-debative at the table, but I'd like an opportunity, if I may.
Sure.
We heard a lot of great testimony, and I appreciate both sides coming in and debating the issue. I appreciate the opportunity to debate the issue. I think it's very important for Minnesota's energy future to be having this discussion, and I think it's even more important for Minnesota's energy future that we pass this bill and lift the ban on new nuclear energy. A couple things that we talked about. First of all, I'll just remind members again that this discussion really is just the beginning. We're not building nuclear plants with this bill. It simply removes the moratorium, brings the discussion to the table. Having said that, there were some comments back and forth on the storage issue and representing the city of Monticello, where we have currently storage on site. I'm very sensitive to that issue. From my perspective, what I think is very important with the storage issue, by lifting this moratorium, I think we move the ball forward on storage. I think we need, the United States is moving forward on nuclear energy. We saw that, President Obama just granting the loan guarantees for the Georgia sites. And I think for Minnesota to have a voice in this, I think it's time to lift this moratorium. I think that quite the contrary to waiting for the feds to act, Minnesota should take an open role. And I'm frankly kind of surprised. I've sat on this committee for about 4 years, and we've discussed renewable energy standards, and we've discussed the Next Generation Act. And we would ask about, well, what's happening on the federal level? And I heard over and over again that as Minnesotans, we should take the lead. That's what we do. We take the lead on energy issues. And now here we are, sort of absconding that responsibility, taking the lead on energy and saying, no, but we're going to keep the prohibition in place for storage. That argument to wait for the feds to act doesn't really hold water for me. I think cost is another concern, and I'm very sensitive to that. And I've always, when we're talking about any type of energy, I think that my contributions in the past have always been sensitive to the cost. But I also think that that's a major reason that we have a Public Utilities Commission. I think that the chamber had some interesting arguments to make. They said, we're in favor of lifting this moratorium, but we may, in fact, be against the actual building of a nuclear plant if the rates just don't make sense. I think that's an important issue as to cost. I also think there are some really interesting articles that I've got here as to the cost issue. I would bring up, it's called thirdway.org. Thirdway is that it's a left-to-center think tank, and they've done a great article on breaking the nuclear financing barrier. And they outline the loan guarantee issue, but they also outline that a part of the heavy cost of building nuclear is the regulatory situation. And they give some examples for streamlining that system, and that could indeed help in lowering the cost for building nuclear plants. I think that that's something that we should look at supporting and things that we could work on going forward in this committee. We touched on the jobs, and we touched on the jobs of building the plant. We touched on the jobs that the permanent, good-paying 700 jobs that would be as a result of a new plant. But I think we also heard from Minnesota companies, and that was a real shining moment for me that I don't think we'd heard in committee before, involved in the nuclear industry. We had Mr. Bill Burns. I thought he was so great. He talked about being nervous but then he talked about, the expansion they're doing in Hutchinson, Minnesota. He talked about their hundreds of employees and that he would like to be doing something in Minnesota. He'd like to, have nuclear not be a bad word in Minnesota. And I was really struck by that. And those are existing jobs right now. Members, I mean, we'll open up the conversation. I appreciate, you know, again, I just appreciate the debate, and let's have at it, I guess.
Kaboom.
Kaboom.
Any discussion?
Well, Madam Chair.
Well, that, madam, I move the bill.
Senator Dahl.
It's probably the best way to start the conversation, then, as we all know, that I've had a press conference about it an hour ago, that I have amendment that would address some of those concerns about safety and cost issues, that if we're going to look at all the options, and I'm certainly open to that, to open up the options of energy in our state and all those things. I know that nuclear energy is a part of our economy right now, and it will be in the future. But we also know that there are a lot of hazards that go along with nuclear energy production, and that we should have a serious discussion about it. But those concerns that around cost and safety especially, I think we need to consider all those consequences of exploring nuclear right now, not sometime in the future. That we should continue to talk about those, and that should be part of our discussion. And I move the A9 amendment to get this conversation started, Madam Chair.
Okay. We'll pass out that amendment.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you. While the amendment's being passed out, Senator Dahl, some of us did not know that you had a press conference. Some of us were busy, so we did not know that there was any amendment being drawn up. The conversation obviously has already started, and it has been going on, and appreciate this conversation. So I just like to say that just because the amendment is being passed out doesn't mean from this point on the conversation has started. We've already had this conversation, and I don't even know what this amendment deals with at all.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Rosen.
Senator Dahl.
This has kind of been a work in progress over the last day and a half and even up until just the last few minutes. So I didn't know we'd actually have a press conference until about an hour before we had it as well. So it's been a moving target for me as well. So I apologize if we didn't get that information to you.
Okay, the amendment has been passed out. Would you like to walk us through the amendment, Senator Dahl?
Yeah, I need a copy of it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What this addresses, if we go into Section 2 here, is addressing, first of all, the costs of building a nuclear power plant, the capital construction costs. So we've seen in some of the testimony that these things can get very expensive, and indeed they need loan guarantees to even go forward. And we haven't found anyone that's willing to do this, and even in the over the last couple of decades, we know that for testimony that there's been no nuclear power plants built, even though most of the states in our country do not have a moratorium. So what we're looking to do here is protect the ratepayer, and that if we're going to go forward with construction of a nuclear power plant, knowing how lengthy that process is, and that even by the NRC's admission, well, they didn't admit it, but they haven't gotten back to me with any indication that it wouldn't happen, that even if construction began, that doesn't mean that a license for operating that plant would be approved. And at the same time, those costs could be passed on to the ratepayer as they're going forward. So we want to make sure there's protections in place that until the plant is fully constructed, that costs could not be passed on to the ratepayer. That's the first part of this bill, this amendment. The second part is dealing with the nuclear waste. I'm of the mind that simply repealing the moratorium is not going to put any more additional pressure on the federal government to do something about the spent nuclear fuel across the country. That what would in fact happen, more likely to increase the pressure, is that if we have companies, utilities, or businesses wanting to move forward on seeking a nuclear power plant, that having to fulfill the condition that there is a federal or a national repository to make that happen, to allow them to move forward, is more likely to compel the federal government to take action. And so that is the second part of this section four regarding the need for a storage facility operated by a federal government, by the federal government, not located or adjacent to the plant site, that is available to accept and permanently and safely store spent nuclear fuel resulting from the electric generation at that proposed plant. In addition to that, we would also want the PUC to consider that there is safe and reliable transportation method is available to move the spent nuclear fuel to a permanent storage site. There's additional considerations as well that probably already looked at by the utilities if they were to go forward with something like this, but that there's no significant risk of cost overruns in the construction process, that if there were significant cost overruns for whatever reason, that the ratepayers would not have to pay for those overruns. In addition, that there would be a full consideration for the extended economic, social, and environmental costs to the host cities due to a plant and the related spent fuel being stored even temporarily at the site. In addition to that, again, probably something that's already looked at is that the plant and the related spent fuel storage facilities would be protected from the risks associated with threats to their physical integrity, that the Minnesota taxpayers would not be at risk through some sort of tax mechanism, whether that's state income taxes or otherwise, to pay for the plant, and that as we go forward, the applicant, if applicable, would be meeting or have met its renewable energy standard objectives and energy saving goals that we've established over the last couple of years. Again, things that are currently already in statute or things that are already considered, and we just wanted to clarify them at this point for the PUC as we go forward. The final section on this amendment is on Section 5 is regarding just an ongoing monitoring and studying of the impacts so that, again, this conversation can be continued as we go forward, that we're looking at, if we're looking at any potential impacts of issuing a certificate of need for a new nuclear-powered generating plant, that we would look at also how the impacts and policies that that without limitation that it include maximizing energy conservation and efficiency. Are we meeting our renewable energy standards? Are we maximizing the generation of electricity with the renewable fuels, minimizing, of course, costs to the ratepayers, keeping a reliable supply of electricity, and protecting the environment? Things like water and the like are very important issues as well as we go forward. I know it's especially water is going to be a big issue as we move throughout the century. And then having a report brought back to the legislature every couple of years or annually after the 2013. I feel that these are conditions that, you know, that are common sense, that are things that we all are concerned about, ratepayers, about the safety of our environment, about the spent fuel rods, having a federal solution, and that if we're to go forward and have this conversation about pursuing nuclear in the state, these are things that should be on the table as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Koch.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I would say, as I said, I'm trying to get a handle on this. It would have been nice to have, Senator Dahl, if you had these concerns, it would have been nice to work with you on this. I would have appreciated that, and I've not had that opportunity at all. I would say that also, I mean, some of this, maybe, some of the commerce stuff, protecting, doing some comfort language for protecting taxpayers, I'm okay with that. Safe and reliable transportation, I would have been happy to work with you on that. I serve on the Council of State Governments Midwest Nuclear Waste Transportation Board. I could tell you that there's an absolute weight. We are already transporting nuclear waste very safely and securely across the U.S., and I would have been happy to work with you on that. But ultimately, I'm opposed to this amendment, and it guts the bill. I don't think that this brings any – this actually leaves the prohibition in place as far as I'm concerned. And what I would say is the main one is on line 2.17 of Subdivision 3. A storage facility operated by the federal government and not located at or adjacent to the plant site is available to accept and permanently safely store spent nuclear fuel. You're giving the federal government an out. You're turning our duty for Minnesota to deal with these, you're turning it back to the federal government. And the federal government has had this issue for 30 years And how are we doing with that? Not very well. I also would say I have some concern about some of the language directing the PUC. I think that, you know, I would be concerned about the legislature taking on the duty of the PUC in parts of this bill. I would express concerns about that. I also notice in the, you talk about permanently and safely storing, it doesn't give the opportunity for, you know, some interim storage. We heard some testimony that there's potential for interim storage at other sites around the U.S. I see this amendment, which is, I would add, four times as long as the bill that I introduced. I see it as really gutting the bill, Madam Chair, and so I would oppose the amendment.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you. And Senator Polk, I apologize for you not getting some of this information. I just got this final draft here a few minutes before we got here. Yes, this is a longer bill or, you know, amendment than the bill itself, and rightfully so, I believe. I mean, this is a serious issue. This is something that is not as simple as let's just lift the moratorium, repeal the moratorium, and let's just go on our merry way. This is about taking a look at all of the conditions and the serious issues surrounding nuclear energy in our state. We know that we have host communities now that even, as we speak, are concerned about having nuclear power generated and spent fuel rods located near their homes and their businesses, making it difficult for them to, you know, apparently even attract new investment into their communities. That's what I'm hearing. But in a longer range, it's that this, as I spoke up last year on the floor, the spent fuel is something that is not going away in our lifetimes or in our kids' lifetimes or even our grandkids' lifetimes. We're going to have that around for a very, very long time, and we have an obligation to find a solution. Now, if your option is that we should have a state solution, just Minnesota, one spot, and we should just go that route, that maybe that's the answer. But I think we've all been going down the direction that says that the federal government is ultimately supposed to be responsible for this. These power plants are regulated by the federal government, and that spent fuel should be, you know, dealt with as a federal problem and a solution. And maybe in the end, Minnesota becomes one of the sites that has to accept that waste as a part of that plan. But until that time, we know at this point one of the reasons we have the moratorium to begin with is because we haven't had a solution for the nuclear, the spent fuel. And we're told that we were going to have a solution by 1998, and here it's 2010. We spent billions of dollars to try to, you know, put into this fund, and now they're pulling the plug anyway. So there are a number of things that are being done, I know, to try to pressure the federal government to come up with a solution. And I believe that until something like this, we put this in place, we're not going to see much movement from our Minnesota unless we have pressure from businesses and the community to say that we want to move forward with nuclear energy, but we can't. It's the only thing holding us back is having some place for the nuclear storage of this waste, and now apply that pressure to the federal government. Right now, if we just lift the moratorium, all we'll do is put that on site and keep it there like we're doing now.
Senator Cope.
Madam Chair. Thank you. And Senator Dahl, you know, some of it I cannot disagree with you. The federal government has done a terrible job. But in your bill, you leave that in their hands. This bill is your amendment is the status quo. What I'm proposing by simply lifting the ban is something new. And I would also ask, maybe it's for staff, but the language on significant cost overruns, some of the language that directs the PUC, is that language something that's been applied in other areas of energy? Is that language anywhere in, say, I mean, maybe in the renewable energy standards? Does it apply to any other type of energy generation in the state?
Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chairman, Senator Koch, yes, it does. Two things. One, it appears as an off-ramp in the renewable energy standard. When we passed that law, one of the off-ramps was if there were significant costs or significant rate impacts to ratepayers. And the other aspect of it is this is the sort of charge that is typically given to the PUC in general language. One of the most common charges, they have to find something where there's not in the public interest. And so it's traditional to give them a lot of discretion because of their expertise.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to that point, Senator Coker, where are you at on the bill? Are you talking about page 2, line 1?
No, I was talking about further down, page 2, line 20. But you're right, page 2, line 1, that's also excellent. Madam Chair, I'm sorry.
And
Senator Rosen?
Madam Chair, and to the point, I guess I would like to have someone testify or talk about how much the rates went up with the renewable energy standard and how much wind really does cost us or solar to the ratepayer. So this is something I think page 2, line 1, 2, and 3 is a very good question, how much all of our renewables are costing the ratepayers, and if that's something that we can just single out nuclear.
Senator Anderson.
Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, I think what this is really addressing, the section that you're talking about on the bottom of page 1 and the top of page 2, isn't so much just what we expect the cost to be, but the fact that we're concerned about ratepayers paying for a nuclear plant before it's even built, which is kind of unprecedented. And, you know, with a wind turbine or even a conventional coal plant, I don't believe we've ever done anything like that in Minnesota, where ratepayers have had to pay for it before it's even been built. And that's because that's been the experience in some other states. We just want to, I mean, I think my concern, which I appreciate Senator Dahl putting in this amendment, is to make sure that that could not happen in Minnesota, that we wouldn't require ratepayers to pay for construction work in progress, or put that in the rate. Let's see. Construction work in progress may not be included. And after the fact, I think they would be able to recover it. That's how it's normally done. After it's built, then it becomes part of their rates. They recover their costs.
And members on this Twin Cities article, Peter Bradford, that was passed out, it comments that laws recently enacted in Georgia, Florida, and Carolina require customer rate increases to pay for the reactors years before they even have their licenses, to say nothing of producing electricity. And then it goes on the next page to say that loan guarantees recently announced for the Georgia project alone amount to exposure of almost $100 per American family.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Rosen.
Well, but that's still, I understand your explanation, Senator Anderson. However, I still think when we did pass our RES, I would think there would have been, and can't verify this, but that was automatically going to be a cost increase to our ratepayers because renewables are more expensive. That's just how it is. So the cost of the renewables are going to get passed down, whether it's a tower or it's solar or whatever. So I'm not sure if anybody would be brave enough to get up there and testify that that's the truth. But
Senator Anderson.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I know the experience of some utilities has been that it's actually helped keep rates down to incorporate renewables into their portfolio. And I know Xcel has said that at different times. I don't know if you asked them that question today, what they would say. Obviously, you have to, but the thing is that the renewable energy standard accounted for that because we, at the time we passed it, we knew that new wind construction was actually competitive in cost to new coal construction. And so I guess I would beg to differ. But we also put that off-ramp in the renewable energy standard that said if there is a significant cost, then the utilities can come to the Public Utilities Commission and make the case that it's a problem, and none of them have done that. So I don't think that the utilities have said to us that the costs have been out of line.
And I'm wondering if there, and I'll get to you, Mr. Franklin, in a minute. Are there any utilities here are willing to testify on the cost of including wind in your profile. Well, think about it, and I'm hoping you'll come to the table. Mr. Franklin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the record, my name's Mike Franklin. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. And to Senator Rosen, I'm not sure if this makes me brave or something else, but I thought I'd jump up just because we do have some experience at the Public Utilities Commission as well as in, at the legislature. And, you know, on these issues of cost, the suspension of CWIP or construction work in progress and not paying for an asset before it's used and useful is not new. In fact, it's not new to Minnesota, and it was kind of perplexing to hear the commentary the other day because it actually does happen in Minnesota on lots of projects right now. In fact, I think that may have been what Senator Dahl was referring to when talking about my testimony to this committee in January. And, you know, looking just, again, having seen this just a few minutes ago for the first time, on, you know, some of this stuff may be really useful to have a long conversation about rate making in general and utility financing and whether it's a good idea or a bad idea to have assets be paid for by ratepayers before they're used and useful or not. But to single out one technology seems to me to be, that would be a new approach because we do this for technologies now, including mercury reduction and I believe MERP had some CWIP in it, and so I just wanted to jump up and say that. And to the extent that that wind is or renewables or the RES is driving costs, you know, obviously rates are going up. You know, obviously we're building these projects now. It's hard to say whether sort of the incremental cost is any higher or lower. It's really an unknown whether the wind is more expensive than what the utility might otherwise have done. We're trying to get that information. We're working with utilities in the PUC, but that's a challenge unto itself, and we're trying to unravel that mystery ourselves.
Well, Madam
Senator,
Madam Chair, the only thing I would say in response is that in the mercury improvements and the MERP project, we specifically passed laws that authorize the rate recovery for those. So there was a special law that was passed to make that possible. And I don't know of any circumstance where it's been used to build a new plant.
What?
And pay for that ahead of time.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Franklin.
I was going to say, Madam Chair and Senator, I believe for certain projects under the RES, this mechanism's used as well, but it's not a plant per se. It's more of a wind farm kind of a thing. But it is fairly common.
Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just so I understand this, typically when you build a new power plant, I don't know who would answer this, but any type of power plant, you can't add any of that cost during construction to the to your rate base. Is that what
you're saying? Mr. Haar, I'm wondering if you would be able to come forward and answer that.
Sorry, Senator, I wasn't.
It was a walkout.
Chair members, my name is Burl Haar. I'm the Executive Secretary of the Public Utilities Commission. The process is for construction work in progress is that it can be approved and it's an allowance that the utilities account for, but the actual recovery in the base rates occurs upon the filing of a rate case, and it's considered then and it's built into the basic rates at that point in time. There are automatic adjustment clauses, lots of them, on different things, as Senator Anderson mentioned, and those apply in specific situations. But that's typically how CWIP works.
So, Madam Chair.
Senator Vanderveer.
So what Senator Dahl is proposing here, that none of this be included in the rate base of a utility, nor may any other cost recovery be authorized. Would you describe that as typical for most projects or atypical?
Madam Chair, Senator, on major construction projects, the utilities usually are interested in establishing an accounting mechanism to track those costs and associated with it so they have a clear, picture of what's the impact, the financial impact, and so that they can be addressed in a rate proceeding. This would alter that somewhat.
So, Madam Chair,
this is a different situation. I mean, there is a significantly larger magnitude of cost associated with construction of a nuclear energy facility than a wind farm or anything else. But that once it comes for a rate case, then I'm assuming that would still be included in their rate recovery, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
So, Madam Chair, I'm a little bit confused.
Senator Vandiver.
If you're going to build a new plant, power plant of any type, typically in your do you get any cost recovery? You get zero cost recovery and zero dollars on your base rate or rate base to pay for plants during construction. Is that typical that you would get some cost recovery, or would you not get cost recovery?
Mr. Haar.
Madam Chair, as I said, there is a mechanism that establishes an accounting process to track those costs, and that is then built into the rate proceeding. But the plant or the facilities really have to be close to being put into service before they would be allowed into the rate base.
Okay, into the rate base. So then cost recovery is where they would look for some funds? Is that in the base, in the cost recovery, is that where they would, if you're going to build the plant, well, let me put it this way. If you're building typically a new power plant, do you get all the financing, pay for it generally, and build it, and when it's completed, start getting money back, or do you get something back during that process?
Madam Chair, if there's a specific cost recovery mechanism that's been authorized, and there are many, then you get immediately, basically. They can come in and apply for that recovery, and the commission has approved those. If something like that doesn't apply, and it's a significant investment, that utilities typically will request this construction work in progress accounting process is set up to track those costs, and then once that facility becomes close to operational, they'll typically file a rate case, or at some point in the future file a rate case, and the recovery of those costs then gets built into the base rates.
Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it sounds like this wouldn't prohibit that practice. They could still account for those costs and put those into their rate request if they were building a nuclear plant. But I think what Dr. Haar is suggesting, that then they wouldn't be able to file the rate case and get the recovery until the plant was soon to be operable. And I think the distinction with these plants that we've heard about is they don't even have licenses yet. So there's some uncertainty whether they will open or not. I assume you wouldn't give rate recovery for a new plant that hadn't been permitted, for example.
Dr. Haar.
Chair, no, you're right.
That's okay. Fine. State your name for the record, please.
I'm Scott Melby, president of Cameco Inc. in Eden Prairie. Again, as a business and a residential ratepayer in the state of Minnesota, I think we're very pleased to hear that there is so much interest in the ratepayer and the impact on them. But I think we're missing the main point of allowing for construction costs into the rate base that this bill, this amendment, would prohibit. I don't believe that the PUC commissions in the states of Georgia or the Carolinas or Florida love their ratepayers any less than we do here in Minnesota. The purpose of allowing for construction costs to be allowed in the rate base the way they have in those states is to save ratepayers significant money in the form of reduced interest costs on a $5-7 billion plant. Interest costs can be significant, and so in the end, I think you could see significant savings to the ratepayer because of allowing a rate treatment as has been allowed in Georgia, for example.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Anderson.
I'm not sure why ratepayers would be filing a lawsuit and trying to repeal that in Florida then. They're not convinced anyway.
It actually, it says here that customers in Texas, Florida, and Missouri have rebelled. Mm. And that this then has caused further delay in the construction process also. Senator Koch?
Oh, that's right, ma'am.
Senator Rosen?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Any other comments?
Well, Madam Chair, I would like a roll call on this amendment.
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
Madam Chair?
Senator Sanjom.
We are, right?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I would just say that, you know, if you like this amendment, in my opinion at least, you're for so watering down this idea of a moratorium that Senator Koch has brought forward that we just might as well dispel and dispense with any further discussion on this. It just seems to me that it sets you up in a situation where, yeah, you know, I like to lift the moratorium, but, and then yeah, I still like to lift the moratorium. And it doesn't, frankly, make any sense to me. And as I see it, going forward with this really just takes the guts right out of any idea that we're going to move Minnesota forward in a nuclear sort of way in even the long-distance future. I just think that this will take the wind out of the sails of our utility companies. They're not going to think in these kind of directions anymore. They know full well that they've got this amendment to deal with. Nothing's going to happen in Minnesota until after all of these, frankly, facts have been flushed out and dealt with, and that's a long time down the road. There's no question about this. I would only hope that we could go forward with Senator Koch's amendment, bill cleanly, and that we could give the nuclear and, the utility industry of Minnesota an opportunity to think this through, to bring forward in a methodical sort of studied sort of way any notions that they would ever have on advancing nuclear power in Minnesota. And we all know that if they do that, if they pull the trigger on that idea, there are miles and miles and miles and hours and hours and hours of miles of paperwork and hours of time that they're going to have to spend before probably the legislature, probably the PUC. There is enough safeguards within that process, in my mind at least, to dispense or dispel the need for this kind of amendment. I just think adopting this pulls the plug on any notion of moving nuclear power forward in Minnesota, and I hope we vote no for it.
You know, the discussion I've heard around this table is that having a moratorium stops the discussion about nuclear energy in the state of Minnesota. So this removes the moratorium. But it says there are certain things we want to do to protect our ratepayers and the citizens in the state. We want to make sure that first there's a national repository. We want to make sure there's safe transportation to that repository. We want to make sure that there isn't excess cost that's laid on the ratepayers or the taxpayers. And we want to make sure that we stay true to our renewable energy goals. All of that is stated elsewhere. I don't know why this would be so offensive.
Madam Chair.
Senator Vanderveer.
Madam Chair, I'm just wondering if we... The second part of the amendment clearly kills, you know, negates the entire intent of the bill. I mean, to put whether we lift the moratorium in any way related to the federal government and their storage solution kills the bill completely. I don't know if that's your intent. I think you have some good points here, but... that's the simple fact of the matter, because after 30 years, we're kind of losing any faith. And if we want to move forward with state-of-the-art energy policy, I think we have to exclude the federal government's inability to act. I mean, to condition it on that is to say you don't want to do it at all. I think whether that's your intent or not, that's going to be the result. So I'm just wondering, Senator Koch, if dividing the amendment might be a possibility, or if you think that, because I'm not sure what the first part of the amendment does.
Senator Koch.
Madam Chair and Senator Vanderveer, I appreciate that. As I said, I have a couple concerns. I agree, sub three, section or part one, guts the bill. I have some concern about the disallowing any type of cost recovery. I have also some concerns there. I think we're really dictating to the PUC, and that would be I think what we're hearing is that would be an unusual situation. And some are on the table saying, yes, it would be unusual because this is because nuclear power is a different type of situation. But I have some concerns about leaving that with the PUC. The rest of it might be fine, Senator Vanderveer, but I just, if a day and a half ago when this was being formulated, someone, you know, might have said to me, hey, I'd like to work on something, I would have been very open to that. But in this case, I think this is a move to gut the bill. And
Senator Koch, we provide guidelines to the PUC all the time. I'm not sure what it is that is.
Madam Chair, I think it's specifically disallowing any other cost recovery. I would prefer to leave that up to the PUC. I think that is unique to this bill, and I think, as Senator Anderson said, these are unique situations, so that's why she would like to see that in there. I have some concerns in its uniqueness.
Okay. Senator Jungfer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. And, you know, I guess in general terms, I'm not that opposed to Section 5. That seems to really get to issues to protect the ratepayer. There might be some of the verbiage that could be a wordsmith a little bit. But quite honestly, you know, between Section 3, Section 4, it's a little disingenuous because we're now making any offer of a nuclear proposal in Minnesota responsible for a promise from the federal government. Why are we hooking that to anything we might consider in Minnesota if the federal government wants to back out and steal our money and not live up to what they were going to do? Then this should be replaced with something that authorizes PUC to be an agency that can join in the lawsuit and be part of that lawsuit against the federal government. We should authorize the Attorney General's office, the PUC, and any other party we think needs to be there as a party to that lawsuit and go after recovering that money for the citizens of Minnesota. And then you'd probably have some buy-in, but to just all of a sudden say, well, Minnesota, we're going to be responsible for the fuel storage that we had a guarantee on. And that guarantee was in place before we allowed nuclear plants in Minnesota. So they were predicated on that guarantee from the federal government. And now we're trying to switch that all around and say, oh, no, well, gee, we better, you know, force the federal government to do something else. This doesn't do anything. It doesn't put any pressure on the federal government. It puts all the pressure on us. And that's wrong to put it on the ratepayers of Minnesota.
Senator Sharon.
I wonder if I might ask Mr. Fuller a question.
Certainly.
Mr. Fuller, in light of what we're talking about here, is this correct? Is my understanding correct that the current language that prohibits new construction of a nuclear power plant, as it stands now, should the federal government resolve the issue of a permanent site for nuclear storage, as President Obama has directed and committed himself to doing, and that was resolved, our law would continue to prohibit any discussions of a nuclear power plant. Is my understanding of that correct? So right now the ban is regardless of what the federal government does, we have a ban on nuclear construction. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Senator Sharon, that's correct.
That's what I think is critical about this. And that is why it's important to recognize that this does allow conversation, doesn't kill the bill. What kills it, the ban kills our being able to do things, even if the federal government does resolve that problem. This opens it up more than in the past.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate Senator Sharon. That's a good explanation. I guess what I have to say is it boggles my mind a little bit to hear all of us say we're all in agreement about something, and that is that the federal government has completely let us down on this. But we come to such completely different conclusions about where that leads us, and that is really kind of interesting. And I have to fall back and say, you know, I'm the only member of this committee that was here in 1994, and it's kind of like deja vu all over again, to coin a bad phrase. That at that time, we said, many of us said, you know, we shouldn't continue with more nuclear waste storage until there's a federal solution, because otherwise we run the risk of being stuck with this waste for generations to come. And I think that's the spirit in which this language is here, at least for me. That's what that means, that it's not that we're giving our power to the federal government to decide. We're taking responsibility for the waste that will be in our state. And if we if we don't do this, then what we're saying is that, you know, the consequences don't matter, and that even if they never find a solution, that's okay. We want to go forward, even if there's no place for this waste to go. And so I guess I would flip on what Senator Koch and Senator Vandiver said on it, and Senator Jungbauer, you said that too, I think, that we're not letting the federal government dictate to us. We're saying, heck no, why would we want to keep this waste unless you solve that problem? Because the repeal, that's what that would say, that we don't care if you solve it. We're going to move forward anyway. And so I would call this a responsible repeal rather than just a repeal that says we want nuclear, you know, the consequences, can I say be damned? Sorry. It's just a good expression. We want it, whether it costs us a lot, we want it whether we're stuck with the waste or not. And so I think that this really is an improvement. As Senator Sharon, I think, was saying, that this tells us that we could go forward if these conditions are met. And they should really be the minimum standards that we set for the protection of our people.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a couple comments. Number one, I think this has been very good to have this discussion, and I thank you, Madam Chair, for allowing Senator Koch's bill to come forward and have a very good, honest conversation. And I know there's quite a few of you around the table that have visited a nuclear power plant, and I would, for those that haven't, I would encourage you to take that opportunity to go and visit those plants and see firsthand how the storage is being dealt with, how the safety measures, how just how it all operates. The more knowledge we have, the better off we are. I think that's very important. The other thing I'd like to draw your attention to is from the Office of Energy and Security, the note that's on here, and the 1,400 megawatts that we're going to be in deficit here very shortly by the year, was it 2013? I can't see it, my glasses. But our options are running out. Our options are clearly running out, and very quickly if we don't get serious about this. And now with the closure of Big Stone 2, wind is a wonderful idea. I live in wind country. We have farms all over. But that's even shrinking because of the options being pulled away. So I will disagree that this bill opens up the conversation and keeps it going, because I look at portions of this bill, and page 2, line 27, the plant and related spent fuel storage facilities will be protected from risks associated with threats to their physical integrity. Now, what in the heck does that mean? I mean, and that's why I would encourage you to go look at these storage facilities and see how the waste is being handled. This is impossible. This is page 2, line 25. There is full consideration of the extended economic, social, environmental costs that the plant and related spent fuel storage facilities place on local host communities. Now, who is going to have that information, and where are we going to be able to fulfill that requirement? So I'm very troubled that we talk about we aren't walking the talk here. I mean, we have to, doesn't mean we're going to open this all up and away we go. We are just having an honest conversation. This clearly kills the conversation, I think, because it is disingenuous. It is full of fluff.
Madam Chair.
Senator Jungbauer first, unless it's a response. But
yeah, well, it was, if I could. Senator Rosen.
Dahl.
Some of these issues that you're bringing up here are good ones. First of all, that the thing from the Office of Energy Security. At this point, I think we're still in there's some dispute as to whether or not how you interpret those numbers are accurate, you know, based on do we need more base load, for instance, or do we need more megawatts, and can we supply that and satisfy that need with existing sources of energy. But to that point, if we did need a base load, and we're talking about the spent fuel issue on the federal government, that's how we start to apply the pressure, because now we know we need to do something, and we need to apply extra pressure on the federal government to solve this issue. Right now, we don't have to do that. We have the luxury of saying, well, we can just keep it stored indefinitely at the sites that they're at. and do the same thing with maybe a new plant were that to come up. We need to force a solution and have the federal government come forward. And if those numbers were accurate, that would be one way of doing that. To those other two points that you had about the host communities and the physical integrity of the and the risks that are associated, those are things that are already occurring. You know, we consider, you know, the utilities do consider the host community. It's just a restating of what they're already doing. The risk factors, part of the NRC process and the permitting process will be what is the security. I've been to both of the nuclear power plants. They are very well run. They are very good people running them. They do an excellent job of maintaining and running those operations, of securing them. And it's incredible. You know, the amount of people that are surrounding it, the searching, you know, for weapons, for bombs, you know, all those things are taken into consideration. They're doing a very good job. It's just a reiteration of things they're already doing. So it really, I don't see that it stops the conversation. It allows us to go forward to have that conversation. But it just says these are things that we want to make sure that we're considering as we go forward.
Senator Jungbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members, and sorry, Senator Dahl, but I don't know how you can read that into this, because this whole section definitely stops the conversation. In fact, it makes the conversation even worse than it is today, because the first point is nothing in this amendment, not one thing in this amendment, members, puts any pressure on the federal government. So we know today that the federal government is walking away. We know that they have taken the money. And the first thing we should do, if we are going to even claim we're going to go after the federal government, is we need to create a legal standing for the PUC, the AG, to sue on behalf of the ratepayers. We need that. The PUC told us the other day they didn't think they had any legal standing in order to do that, to join in. We know the power companies can, because they're collecting it on behalf of the ratepayers and sending it in. So there's nothing today in this amendment that puts any pressure on the government, or the federal government. It puts a lot of pressure on Minnesota. But as you walk through some of these items, what they actually are doing even worse than, let's even say we don't want to have a new power plant because we're considering the things that are in Section 5, Subdivision 3D, and we could agree that those are good for the ratepayers, and we'd actually look at those. I believe, based on my knowledge of what's coming up in terms of nuclear power and other alternative energies as well, that do have something to do with nuclear. Another thing we're not talking about is radiation exists in real life out there. There's a lot of places on the face of the earth that you can't walk without getting radiation, without getting enough to get sick. So we're not, it's not something mysterious that we're creating here that doesn't exist out there in real life anyway on a natural basis. So let's get rid of some of that fear. But where we're going to really gain the research and what we're going to really be able to do with this spent fuel is either reprocess it or secondary generation using the existing fuel rods as they exist. We will be able to create those technologies. And none of that's going to happen under Section 4, Subdivision 3C. So we're not only eliminating or making it harder to have the other parts of the conversation, but we're eliminating the best part that we need to do, is what do we do with spent fuel? How do we reprocess it? How do we get it down to a point where it has a minimal potential degradation to human and environmental issues? So that just undoes any of that stuff and puts zero pressure again. The biggest point, I think, zero pressure on the federal government in any of this, and that's where we need to start.
Senator Olstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Jungbauer, if you draft that bill, I would be happy to be a co-signer of it.
Well, Madam Chair and members.
Senator Jungbauer.
I'm hoping maybe that's part of this conversation, and if we find at the end of today that we need and we can refine some of these other things that need to be in there in order to move this, that's what's exciting about having this conversation, is finding out those details that will bring us together. Senator Anderson, you did say that right. We do have a lot of these things, and that's what I always hope to work on. What are the outcomes that we do all agree on? And so let's keep talking about what are those pieces that we need to put together to make this work. Some of them are here. I think some of the biggest ones aren't. But now I have those ideas, so I can move that, and I'll be happy to author that.
Senator Koch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Rosen brought up a great point about the baseload need, and the clock is ticking. Section 4, Sub 3 is a foot drag. It is waiting for the federal government to act. We've been waiting for the federal government to act since 1994, and now we're looking down looking at a need, and this is from the Office of Energy Security, based on IRPs, based on what the utilities are telling us, a base load need of over 1,400 megawatts by 2025. That's 15 years. I think we even heard some of the testifiers saying, they said, it's a well, there's not some barge in Lake Superior with a nuclear plant on it, or it's not just over the border in Canada to haul in, although there's apparently some technologies where they're putting it on trucks now. But in reality, this is a long process, and 15 years is just around the corner. And you put another weight on that, another foot drag for the federal government, and we are seriously, you know, compromising Minnesota's energy requirements here. So that's why I believe this completely guts the bill, Senator Dahl.
Yeah, I would point out, though, that no utility has asked for additional coal-powered energy or nuclear-powered energy. Their plans are to use peaking plants and hydro. Those are in the works. Those are the things they're working toward. So right now, there is not a need for a large new baseload facility other than a hydro plant or a peaking plant.
Madam Chair.
Senator Sharon, I think, was first, and then Senator Rosen.
I've enjoyed this conversation. I would like to ask, in relationship to storage, Senator Koch, you said something earlier during your general presentation that I would like to go back to. And that is, and I want to make sure I understand your position on this number 2.17 on page 2, which is about the federal solution to spent fuel. A failure to have a federal solution for the spent would allow the spent fuel to be treated in what way? How would we manage the spent fuel without a federal solution, from your perspective, that is comfortable enough for you to allow us to move ahead without this provision?
Thanks. Madam Chair?
Senator
Sharon, thank you for the question. First of all, as I expressed my concern in waiting for the feds, is the dragging the foot sort of thing, and also allowing them, I really feel like they have, Senator Anderson agrees, that they have been 30 years and ineffective on this issue. What I might see, you know, I'm not certain. I'm interested in your bill, and you've got a bill next week, I believe, in this committee that's going to talk about some Minnesota solutions to ongoing storage solutions. I believe firmly that the feds eventually must react to this, and I believe that by lifting the moratorium, you push them to that. But I think there are some. I think your bill is an interesting solution. I'm looking forward to that conversation. I do see it. I think it'd be nice to keep the two issues separate. But I think that's an interesting solution to the waste problem, and I'm glad you're bringing that up. I think that we maybe don't even know what some of the solutions are going to be once the nuclear industry gets ramped up in the United States, which clearly they are. We're seeing the first new plants in 30 years going in Georgia. There could be all kinds of different solutions that come forward. There might be interim storage in another state with a willing partner to take the storage in a temporary facility. This precludes that. It talks about permanent storage. So that is my issue with the 2.17 to 2.19. I think there's a lot of options out there. I think this just puts full stop to that conversation.
Okay. I think it was Senator Jungbar and then Senator Anderson and Rosen.
She was ahead of me.
Okay. Senator Jungbar.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if, you know, we could get any more information about this, but I've been thinking a lot, and like Senator Olsen, about some of these issues. And we do know more about radiation and different types of radiation today and how to contain and protect health and life in general from that radiation. And I guess my concern is I've been looking through all the federal regulations, and since everything is licensed by the federal and the Nuclear Energy Regulatory Agency, we have some good geologic forms in Minnesota that could be repositories. And I guess for future, as we're working through some of this, I'd like to know, could we create our own that would be part of legislation without opening the doors, since it would be nationally registered or licensed, without opening the doors to other states? Could we be a repository for our own without, you know, everybody else saying, well, you got one, we're going to bring ours there too. Because I don't think Minnesotans would have a problem with that if we would deal with our own issues. So, you know, that's what I've been looking at, and it occurs to me that if we built our own, then it would be an opening for everybody else to dump theirs in Minnesota. So I don't know if we can find somebody, Mr. Fuller, if you know any background on that, or what would end up happening that way, because that could be a component of a bill as well.
Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, Senator Jumba, I don't know the precise answer, but I think it's not unreasonable to assume that there would be a possibility that the federal government could utilize something that we had done for other states, or just not all the realm of possibility, but I don't, you know, under some federal supremacy or, you know, and they might look, I mean, they're certainly conceivable that could happen, and it's one of the concerns.
And that, Madam Chair and
Senator Chungpar,
members, that would be a concern, because I think we could do a good job of fashioning something where we could take care of things and provide long-term storage, but I don't think anybody in this room wants to open it up to everybody else in the United States to, you know, I'm not a generally a not in my backyard kind of guy, but that's a whole other story, and that's what Nevada was facing for issues as well.
Senator Rosen.
And everybody.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like to go back to the conversation about our baseload, because Senator Dahl left the question open whether this figure of 1,400 megawatts was questioned. There was some question about that figure. So I was wondering if we could have Deputy Commissioner Glahn come up and explain the letter and about our baseload needs.
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I'm Bill Glahn, Deputy Commissioner of Commerce, Director of the Office of Energy Security. Just a little background on this. This was in direct response to the question I believe it was Senator Anderson asked in our presentation the other day about, well, why are we even talking about this when we don't need any base load until 2024? Forgive me if I'm misquoting you.
Sounds about right.
But my point was, I have a spreadsheet that I had one of my staff folks put together that shows, based on the integrated resource plans that the utilities submit periodically to the Public Utilities Commission, what are they saying are their plans moving forward to fill their requirements to provide safe, reliable service to their customers. So this is a whole different take on the study I had done, or my staff had done some months ago on running a model saying how much we need 4,000 megawatts of capacity in the next 15 years, and we had a model that picked one coal plant under one scenario and a nuclear plant under a different scenario. And I said, well, you know, that's our thoughts. That's our modeling. You know, what are the utilities telling us? And, you know, I don't discount the possibility there's a typo in here or we got a number wrong, as Senator Dahl was questioning, but I had my staff take what are the actual plans that utilities have put forward. Are they building peaking? Are they building intermediate? Are they building baseload? What have they told the commission their plans are for the next 15 years? And looking forward, you see a lot of peaking plants going in. Somebody made that observation. That's certainly true. A lot of intermediate capacity. And that would be the peaking intermediate capacity would be almost exclusively natural gas fired, and there's some base load. And you can see these plans aren't the most current and up to date because they include, but they are the current ones on file with the commission. But they include, as meeting their requirements going forward, the Big Stone 2 plant in South Dakota, which is no longer on the table, and the Sutherland 4 plant in Iowa, which is no longer on the table. So it brought up the question in my mind, well, the next couple of years we look like we're okay. There's going to be some uprates at existing facilities, and that'll get us through the next couple of years. But what are utilities going to do to replace Big Stone 2? What are they going to do to replace Sutherland 4? And then going farther out in the future, what are they going to do for what they have identified to the commission as their baseload requirements going forward? In some theoretical world, we could always do more wind, more gas, but in their planning, they have identified a specific need for this baseload resource and have not put forward and have put forward that as part of their resource plan.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just for clarification, Deputy Commissioner, I didn't question your numbers as far as the decimal point. It might have been someone else, but I, I was concerned with not the numbers, but where we would be supplying that, you know, that base load from, whether it's coming from the peaking plants or from hydro or maybe from wind. But I didn't question your numbers. And if I might, just one other thing, Madam Chair, is that on the Big Stone 2 issue, I understand that there was a partnership of different utilities that were coming together to work on that plant, and that we had some that pulled out of that arrangement. And maybe I'm wrong, but it was my understanding that part of the reason was that some of those utilities felt there wasn't a need for that additional base load of Big Stone 2, and that they pulled back from the partnership. Am I wrong in that understanding?
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, I would guess I'd ask them to speak for themselves because I was not part of the consortium, but at least my characterization of what I heard, and I spoke directly with the chairman of the lead utility, was it wasn't that they didn't need it, is that they couldn't finance it with all the uncertainty we'd placed, all the conditions we had placed on our granting permission for it. So they couldn't go and take it to Wall Street to get it financed. We were saying that we put condition A, B, and C on it, and then with the cap and trade bill floating around Congress and everything else going on with the greater economy and the still ongoing turmoil in the financial markets, they didn't say, oh, we've decided with the recession or for whatever reason we don't need it anymore, is we can't finance that specific project on Wall Street today. So rather than moving ahead under those conditions, they disbanded the consortium. Again, I'd invite the utilities to come and clarify my perhaps I shouldn't invite them to come and clarify it, but that's my understanding of how that ended up in the end.
Wondering, could the PUC respond to that?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
Yeah, Dr. Haar, the question is, has there been a request for any additional base load from the utilities that is not in our foreseeable grasp for the through the year or up to the year 2025?
Madam Chair, members, I'm not aware of any, no.
Okay, thank you. Senator Anderson.
Well, Madam Chair, just on this point, I ask an energy lawyer I know just to take a look at these projects, too, and I guess the response I got was, besides what Senator Dahl said, that assuming the need for Big Stone may not exist at this point, and we haven't heard a request for new power to replace that, and if you subtract out all the baseload additions to existing plants from this list, which means not a new facility, and if you subtract out Basin, which is mostly not in Minnesota, and it doesn't specify that whether it's baseload, and Minn Kota is some unspecified date in the future, I guess what she came up with was a grand total of 100 megawatts out of this list that would be needed by 2020. So I guess the details matter. And we could debate about those probably all day.
Deputy Commissioner.
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, I would point out that the Basin 400 megawatts I did not include in my, and I recall the number was 1,100 and some.
Here.
It's on the list, I didn't include it in the my statement, the nearly 1,200 of the 1,400. That 400 was not in there.
I'm not sure that this discussion is of value any longer. Thank you. Senator Dipple and then Senator Sharon.
Thanks, Matt. It was to this, so.
Oh, it was.
Yeah,
oh.
That's fine. We can move on.
Okay. Senator Sharon.
This is not to that. I'm going back to the issue of spent nuclear waste. And as I've already said, I think that this amendment clearly allows us to move forward with nuclear power if the issue of storage is resolved at the federal level, which cannot be done now. That's a critical point I was trying to make. And we should acknowledge that. The second thing I would say is that this amendment forces us to focus on the question of spent nuclear waste instead of on how much base load is needed, because the market can and financing and all of those things come forward if there is a need for a product. But the issue of how we deal with spent nuclear storage continues to be the thing that is troublesome to everybody. And what this will do, why it isn't a wash or just doing nothing or going back to zero again, is that it will force us into talking about would we be open to going forward if, I mean, you can always come back and argue again, if the nuclear industry found somebody willing to take our waste temporarily in another state, you can go back and say, would we be willing to go along with that? I mean, you can come back to that. We start to focus on the issue of how do you deal with spent nuclear waste? How do you reprocess it? Are there new alternatives for managing waste that we don't know of? All of the focus gets placed on the right subject. It's what people are concerned about, and it will cause the conversation to get going on that subject.
On the amendment, Senator Koch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Sharon, as we go along here now, we've had some time, I'm starting to think about this. And we talked about your bill that's coming up next week, and you are dealing with the storage issue in your bill, as I've read it and understand it.
Can I respond to that?
Sure. Senator Sharon.
May I respond to that? Because I intended to. I wanted to respond to your statement before. And I want you all to be clear that the bill that we'll be hearing next Thursday has to do with the existing waste at the existing plant. It's not a solution for spent nuclear waste. It is a discussion we need to have about our assumptions that the federal government is going to solve this problem, and are we prepared and have we supported the communities should that not happen? So it's not really a solution to spent nuclear storage. It's a way of protecting the state of Minnesota from expenses or costs associated with ongoing storage.
Senator Koch.
Senator Sharon and I would agree. You're right. It's, and I'm sorry if I characterized it as the final solution. It's not. But it is dealing with the waste issue on a state level. And I'm just wondering if perhaps some of this language, and I don't know if Senator Dahl is involved with the bill, but if some of this language doesn't more likely belong with your bill. And in some ways, perhaps the bills might have been easier had we reversed the bills and heard your bill and then heard this bill. But that's not as it is. And so, you know, last year on the Senate floor, overwhelmingly the Senate voted 42-24 to pass, just to move forward with the lifting the prohibition. Just very clean language, a very strong statement. And I'd like to see this committee, you know, follow through with that, while simultaneously I'd be very willing to work with you on your bill and in perhaps including some of this language and expanding that bill. But I think it's very important for us to make this statement with this clean bill and simply lift the prohibition. I think you can separate the two issues. We're not building a new plant. We're going to be having lots of discussions on costs and wastes with future bills in the PUC. But I would really encourage the members to let's move forward with the lifting of the prohibition, and then you know, let's talk about these other issues. I'm very open to them. I think some of these things that you've got, Senator Dahl, could be very workable. I don't know if I'm ever going to agree with 2.17 to 2.19, but you know, maybe that's the vehicle to work with it in the spirit of compromise.
Senator Koch, if the language is the same, what difference does it make which bill it's in? Senator Senja.
Madam Chair, and I would just state once again, at least with respect to this amendment, I think adoption of this amendment doesn't lead at all to any focus on waste, any focus on storage. Frankly, I don't think any focus on moving nuclear energy ahead in Minnesota. I don't believe the utility industries of Minnesota, if we adopt this amendment, are going to put any time, any energy, any resources into even thinking about nuclear energy. The hill is just simply too high. The road is too tough. It's too long. I think if we go ahead with a clean bill, such as Senator Koch has provided us today, and reject this amendment, all this discussion can occur after there's interest. But I just don't believe interest in nuclear power is going to occur if we, in fact, adopt this amendment. It's just it's simply too onerous. The nuclear or the utility industry in Minnesota is not going to get excited. We'll go through another generation of legislators. Sometime in 2020, we'll talk about it again, I suppose. I won't be here, but it just, I think, just stalls this thing out to the point that nothing happens, and I think that would be unfortunate.
Any further discussion on the amendment? Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I've been listening to this for quite some time, and as you probably know, I voted for the repeal last year, and that was an amendment brought up on the floor, and we did not have the kind of discussion that we've had in the last few days, and that was troubling to me, because I think that what we need to do is we need to take it out of the hands of the politicians and put it into the hands of the technical people, and being a technical person, I'm always interested in that. But I think that these are, you know, in my seatmate, John Dahl, voted against it. And I went after him about it. I said, you have to figure out a way to support this. And as we've talked about it over the year, he has come around and found a way to support this. And I think this is something that is very important to people. It's very important to my constituents. I have hundreds of emails that I've gotten already. And I think the criticism of the federal government is a little bit off base. Yes, they've not done what they should have done, but they're still collecting the money to do it. Not only that, is I don't think we need to sue them. We have 10 people that we send to Washington, and they should be working for us. We should be pressuring them to work for us and solve this problem. It can be solved. It's mainly a technical issue, but, of course, the location where it gets stored is a very political issue. I don't know that we want Yucca Mountain on someplace in near Big Stone or anywhere in Minnesota, but the fact of the matter is somebody is going to have to take it, or we're going to have to figure out how to do it in each individual state. So there's a lot of technical issues that have to be solved, and this is not a 10-year or 20-year issue. This is a 100-year or a 1,000-year issue, because long after the plants we build are obsolete, the spent fuel will still be here. So we have to deal with all of this, and we have to deal with it very seriously, and it has to be put into the best hands possible to be able to deal with. Only then am I comfortable that this is going to go ahead with the kind of attention that this body has to put into it right up front. So I am supportive of this amendment. I think it's a good thing, and I think it probably will get greater support, perhaps even on the other body that stopped this plan last year. So I'm strongly supportive of Senator Dahl's amendment, and I think we should pass it.
Senator Dahl and then Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I just wanted to respond, if I could, to Senator Senjum's comments. I mean, if the only way that it seems to me that what you're suggesting is that the nuclear industry would only pursue another plant as if things are left as is in terms of the spent fuel, and that option now is to simply keep it on site, that only under that condition would they want to pursue this, that if we, because this has a requirement that the federal government needs to do something, they would be somehow blocked from having the conversations or doing any kind of site prep to investigate whether or not we need to go forward. And that's, I think, exactly what we don't want. We don't want us to go forward simply saying that the status quo of keeping spent fuel on site is the de facto option, and we need to solve the problem. And I go back to saying, Senator Sharon, you said it eloquently, we still can have this conversation and investigate where we go with nuclear power in the state and invest the minimal amounts, I guess, that would be necessary to start to do some initial preparations. But without this, we don't pressure the government to do anything. And, you know, until the industry itself has determined that this is a site that needs to be, you know, Minnesota is a site for additional nuclear power, and we get that leverage from there, that community, we're never going to get the federal government to move, I don't believe.
Senator Vandiver.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To my good friend, Senator Dahl, we can read your amendment. It kills the bill. We are fiddling members while Rome burns. Our standard of living depends on affordable, clean, abundant energy. We're in a self-induced depression. It started with the $4 a gallon gas, and it continues today. When it comes to our energy policy, it's from the dark ages. We can't look for oil where we are likely to find it. When we do find it, we can't extract it. The oil we extract can't be refined. We don't allow building refineries. And now we get to nuclear energy, the cheapest, cleanest energy we have in the country. It's been around for a long, long time, used in Europe, used here. What are we doing? What are we doing? We're sitting here wondering, should we build a big, giant new plant that'll last our kids through their lifetimes and beyond, as does the Monticello, as does the Red Wing plant? And we're debating it at a time when nobody has a job. We defy every known principle of economics in the world with this kind of nonsense. There is no safer, cleaner way to produce electricity, and if business doesn't have it, if commerce doesn't have it, if our people don't have it, then our standard of living is reversed. The Dahl Amendment puts us in the dark ages, period, and it keeps us there and it condemns us there. Our people are living in a state of insecurity that they have not seen, that I have not seen in my lifetime. And what are we doing? We're playing little games to see if we can stop something. If you don't think we should go forward with it, then just vote down the bill. But this is not a solution. Everyone in this room knows it's not a solution. It is not an alternative. It is the end of the discussion. So members, either vote down this amendment and then vote down the bill if you don't like it. But don't play games with the future of our state. Let everyone know where you stand. And if you don't have a better idea than this, then I suggest you go along with it.
Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Vandiver, you said it very well. And I guess I just keep looking at this, and I think about the comments that Xcel has expressed that they probably will not build another nuclear plant in the state. So a bill like this, if it moves forward, who's going to want to go through, who in their right mind would come to Minnesota to build a nuclear plant when they have to go through this amendment? And then I think we still have 1,400 megawatts to make up. Where is that energy going to come from? I mean, this is, we have to keep the discussion rolling. And I think, as you said, Senator Vandiver, this is dead on arrival for anybody to ever consider Minnesota as far as nuclear expansion.
Senator Olsen, Senator Dibble, and then perhaps we should vote.
Madam Chair, I'm working hard in my district. There's still a possibility of a 725 megawatt intermediate plant, so there's half your problem right there.
Senator Dibble.
Madam Chair. I haven't heard any argument yet that, other than rhetoric, that says that this kills the ability to move forward on discussing and considering nuclear power. I'm going to vote for this amendment, but I'm going to vote against voting this particular bill out of committee, because to me, this lifts the moratorium, and I'm not comfortable with that. But I think what this language does simply says, yeah, we're going to consider some things. And we're going to consider all the things that we've heard brought forward from our constituents and from those who who are paying attention to these issues, we're going to look at and talk about and examine these issues in a somewhat more responsible way. I think I can't imagine going back to the people of Minnesota and saying, oh, we've just kind of lifted the nuclear moratorium without considering, and it is an absolute fallacy to argue that it's the cleanest form of energy available to us. Nuclear spent waste is extremely dangerous. We have to consider that. And the people of Minnesota have told us they want us to consider that issue, grapple with that problem, and solve it. To be silent on that would be the height of irresponsibility. To be silent on the issue of exposure to risk for ratepayers and for taxpayers would be irresponsible. To not talk about impacts on local communities, as we've seen local communities come forward time and again to talk about the burden of responsibility that they bear, would be irresponsible. So I thank Senator Dahl for at least enumerating some of the issues that we as responsible policymakers have to consider if we're going to make a significant change and build more nuclear power that has a significant consequence. And it lifts the moratorium, which I continue to be uncomfortable with. So, you know, I'm going to support the amendment because I think it's a step in the right direction, but I don't support lifting the moratorium. So, you know, to me, this does that, and you know, it's just a little bit farther than I can go right now.
Okay. On the A9 amendment, then, and there has been a roll call requested.
Senator Prentner-Solon.
Aye.
Senator Anderson.
Aye.
Senator Carlson.
Aye.
Senator Kevin Dahl.
Aye.
Senator Dibble.
Aye.
Senator John Dahl.
Aye.
Senator Jungbauer.
No.
Senator Koch.
No.
Senator Olsen.
Aye.
Senator Rosen.
No.
Senator Rummel.
Aye.
Senator Senjum.
No.
Senator Sharon.
Yes.
Senator Sparks.
No.
Senator Vandeveer.
There being 9 ayes and 6 nays, the motion does prevail. So on the bill then, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say just one more comment before we take our final vote.
Oh, Madam Chair, if I may, I'd like to move to table the bill.
There's been a motion to table the bill.
Great disappointment.
Which, all those in favor, please signify by stating aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Aye.
Motion prevails. And there being no further business before our committee at this time, the meeting is adjourned.
I'm going to thank everyone.